The work never stops. This week, moving from Parshas Vayechi into Parshas Shmos is very much a week of transition. On the surface, the transition is because we're moving from when life is good for the Shvatim to a new Parsha, literally and figuratively, where the Shibud begins. And even though the Ramban calls this Sefer Shmos, the Sefer of the Gula, it starts with anything but. We'll come back to that in a little while. But there are much more nuanced and powerful strands of transition that we find moving from Vayechi to Parshas Shmos, ironically, in the way that the two sort of blend together. What do I mean by that? So on the one hand, we imagine that the Parshas Vayechi doesn't have that transition because it's only after Vayechi is over then Shmos starts. After the period of time in which the Jews were enjoying their life in Goshen, with all the Shvatim still alive, even after the death of Yaakov, only after that is done, the Medrash tells us, Chazal tells us in Seder Olam, that we begin the period of the Shibud. But Rashi already hints at the beginning of Parshas Vayechi that that's not the case. Parshas Vayechi, everyone's focusing on the seamless transition, not between Vayechi and Shmos, because those are really not. You have a much larger break in the Parsha, in the actual Sefer Torah, whereas between Vayigash and Vayechi, there's no break. So Rashi over there, in explaining, based on Chazal, the Stimas of Parsha, see, he says that this is where we begin to see Fisha Kevinsha Nifter Yaakov Avinu Nistumay Neim Velibim Shal Yisrael Mitzar Sashibut Sheshchil L'Shabdom. From the time that Yaakov died, so the Shibud begins. That Chor is Tumor. What does that mean? What does that mean? That's when the Shibud begins? On the contrary, that's the kingdom of on Rashi. It's not true. Yosef is still the Melech. Yosef is still the Melech. And like I said before, Chazal tell us that as long as one of the Shvatim, as long as Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda were still alive, the people were not enslaved. So what does that mean? So Rav Schwab has a very interesting pshat. If you watch the Diyukim in Parshas Vayechi, after Yaakov dies, things are not exactly the same. Most apparent, L'chora, is that as soon as Yosef is ready, again, it's 70 days after Yaakov passes away, so he's not an Avelis. Yosef wants to bring the body of Yaakov Avinu to Eretz Yisrael. So what happens? So if I would ask you, what did Yosef do? So Yosef asked Paro for permission, right? Is that what happened? No, stop shouting the Pasuk. Pasuk says like this. Pasuk says, Vayidaber al Beis Paro Lemor. Since when does Yosef need to go to Beis Paro? Right? Beis Paro are the people always on the side. They're always the people who are listening in, watching from the sidelines. Sounds like he's not talking to the figures of authority over here. Moreover, you look in the Medrash. The Medrash teaches that lashon Beis Paro to say that Yosef had to go through a whole number of steps of hierarchy, including the queen. We don't know anything about the queen, but here the queen of Egypt shows up, and hopefully the queen will be able to intercede to Paro to allow Yosef to go upstairs. Well, what's going on? What's pshat? Sounds like he no longer had that access. Moreover, the Medrash tells us when Yaakov asks Yosef to bring him to Eretz Yisrael to bury him, I'll not take him to Mitzrayim. Anochi Esaket Baracha. Yosef responds by saying, "No problem, I'll take care of it." And nevertheless, Yaakov goes ahead and afterwards asks him to swear. So why does he need to do that? So Yaakov was able to foresee what the first Nakuda that Rav Schwab is pointing out, that was going to take place. That immediately at the death of Yaakov, Yaakov Avinu's presence in Mitzrayim was clearly a skula. It was something that was above nature in terms of the shortening of the famine, and also in terms of he gave special brachos to Paro, that the Nilus would come up to his feet. B'chulei, when Yaakov Avinu died, Yosef went from being a shalit al Mitzrayim to just a very chosh of a guy who was very rich and had a lot of honor, but wasn't the same shalit al Mitzrayim that he was before. And that's the Tchilas HaShibud that the Medrash, the Rashi's quoting, is trying to point to. So that's one way in which Vayechi sort of blends into Shmos. Okay, I'm using this all as a background to be able to talk about Vayechi and Shmos in the same parsha, in the same week. Another interesting way in which that dichotomy expresses itself is not so much in the transition from the Geula to the Shibud, which starts in last week's parsha, but also in the Golos to the Geula as well. Mordechai Kamenetsky, maybe some of you are familiar with some of his writings. He published a lot of Divrei Torah online. I know him because he was Rebbe of mine in South Shore, in the Five Towns. So his son was in my class in seventh grade. He has a brilliant question. If you listen to the laning, just yesterday, right? So everyone is on their feet, chazak, chazak, and it's chazak. Right? So what are you responding to? What are the final words of Parshas Vayechi? I don't know.
Yeah, the grandchildren.
No, after that. Vayisim ba'aron b'Mitzrayim, right? They put Yosef in a coffin in Egypt. Chazak, chazak, minis chazek. What's going on over here? You know, sometimes the tune and the tone and mood in which we express things are incongruent to what the words are actually in. My favorite example is Zmiros. You really have to pay attention to Zmiros, because Zmiros, very easy to lose what you're saying. You know, Mechel melacha bo sofo lehachris. What's going on, right? It's mamish. It just doesn't fit, right? So I don't know who came up with that tune. It's a beautiful tune for just about the rest, almost everything else in that particular song. But sometimes you get to words and the tune just doesn't fit, right? So Va'isim Baron, Bimitzrayim, right? Chazak, chazak. Where's the chizik? Where's the chizik? Adarabba. This is the tchilas shivud, right? That's what we're trying to say. Now Yosef is dead. So Viter, things are going down the tubes for Klal Yisrael. What's pshat? So he explained like this. He says that Va'isim Baron, Bimitzrayim. But that's not a lashon that you find, for instance, when Yaakov dies, or when anyone else, Vayigba, Vayomos, they're buried in the ground, right? Where do we have an Aron? Where do we have an Aron? Immediately before Yosef dies, so he says to his brothers, Vayomer Yosef el Echav, Anochi Meis Velkim Pakod Yivkar Eschem Vehela Eschem in Ar Tazos Al Ar Tashenish Bel Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. The final theme of the Parsha is Yosef telling his brothers, be aware that you're going to get out of here. I don't know exactly when it's going to be. I'm not telling you when it's going to be. Maybe I don't have that information. But pakod yivkod, that's the message he leaves him with. So Vayisim Baron b'Mitzrayim is he wasn't buried in the ground with everybody else. He was put in a coffin as if to say that when the time comes, they're just going to pick him up and go. That the way he's going to be carried through the midbar is already the way he's being buried right now in order to instill within them, within his brothers, the sense that you can sense the shibud zara, because we sense it already when Yaakov Avinu died. But afal pichein, be aware and feel the hope that's about to carry you through the next stage of the shibud until it's time to go to Eretz Yisrael. In another piece, Rabbi Kamenetsky is mitzayin an interesting story with Natan Sharansky. Natan Sharansky was imprisoned. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So he was visited by his sister and his mother, and they did something which got the guards upset. I think they picked up their shirt and they had a t-shirt underneath that said "Free Natan Sharansky," and the guard whisked them away and put them back in the cell. And he said, "That's the last time we're gonna have visitors for another 6 months." So just to quote the Lashon, he said to him, "That's too bad, but you know what? My sentence will end one day. But what about you? You're spending your life in jail." That's what he said to the guard in the jail. So very chav. You know, you can be. He uses this to answer a beautiful ha'ar in the Haggadah. Right at the beginning of the Haggadah, so we say, originally we were avodim to Parmen Tzrayim, right? Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes us out. But right before that, we said, Hashata Avdi Yisrael B'Arz Yisrael, right? So which one is it? Are we free or are we still Avodim? So the answer is you can be an Eved, but if your sense of hope is strong, so it doesn't matter where you may be holding immediately, again, at this moment in your timeline of freedom, but you already have one foot out the door. And that was the message that Yosef was trying to leave them with. So that's the transition between Vayechin and Shemos, not just in terms of the moving from the Cheres to the Shibud, but also moving from the Shibud into the Geula, which is why the Ramban is able to call Sefer Shemos the Sefer Geula. So it's interesting because there is one personality, a group of personalities that sort of straddles that fence, both sides of the coin of these two linked parshas Vayechin Shemos, and that is Levi. Levi is a fascinating individual. What we know about him. Specifically at this juncture, people often ask, you know, the yeshiva shame the Aver, what were they learning all day? It's a big kasha. What were they learning all day? There's an unbelievable Rambam in, of all places, it's in the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah. I think it's Perek Aleph, Halacha Gimel. And he tells us a little bit about what was going on, also the yeshiva that Yehuda set up when he came down to Mitzrayim in Vayigash. So the Rambam writes like this. You have to remember that this whole beginning of the Rambam is really unbelievable. The Rambam says Yitzchak was learning. Yitzchak hodil Yaakov u'mineil lamed v'yoshev u'malamed u'machzik kol nivim elav. Yitzchak was Rosh Hashiva. Yaakov Avinu limed ban of kulam. Yaakov Avinu also taught all of his children. V'hivdil Levi u'minehu rosh. Of all the sons, and you know, we're used to thinking about Yaakov learning with Binyamin. Right, or Yosef, Egla, Rufa, but he learned with all of his sons, but he selected Levi to be the Rosh Hashiva. Boshiva b'yeshiva, lalami derech Hashem, v'lishmor mitzvah Avram. The sugyas that they were learning were the sugyas of derech Hashem, which elsewhere the Rambam talks about. Valachta b'drachav, mahu chanan, avatai, heichanan, rachum, b'chule, chesed, all the midas of HaKadosh Baruch that we're supposed to emulate. V'tzivas bonav shali afsiku b'bnei Levi, memuna achar memuna, kedei shel tishtakech halimud. Unbelievable. So not only was Levi the Rosh Yeshiva in time of Yaakov, but this is like the original yeshivish nepotism in terms of, you know, the next one in line for the Rosh Yeshiva. Yaakov Avinu was mitzvah that it should be dafka from Levi and his children going vaitan. That's going to be the glue that keeps together Klal Yisrael through the hemshach of Talmud Torah throughout the generations. And you go through Tanakh, you see that Levi exemplifies that role. Sifzei kon yishmu das, Pesuk says in Malachi, that the Kohan, Sheva Levi, are going to be the ones who are the educators. And this, of course, is not just what's happening at the beginning of Parsha Shmos, which we'll get back to in a second, but in Parsha Vayechi also, the brachos that Yaakov gives to his children, Shimon and Levi specifically, highlight this point. Shimon and Levi are going to be dispersed. Yeah? Afitzein v'Yaakov. He's going to make sure that both Shimon and Levi are never quite settled. They're not exactly the same type of lack of permanent residence. Shimon really has no place of his own, and even Levi is a little bit over here, a little bit over there. They don't have their own tract of land, their own chalukah in Eretz Yisrael to identify as their personal place. And one of the things that Rashi points out, talking about Shimon, he's talking about Levi also, is the midah of Shimon. He's going to be the Malamdik Tinokos. He's going to be the Rebbe. He's going to be the Rebbe. And he's never going to be able to hold down, you know, the fort and buy a home and settle in and add three bedrooms onto it, and, you know, and a bigger driveway. Shimon's always all over the place. And Levi also, he's got to go from one place to another, begging for Meiser, for Truma. That's what Rashi says. It reminds me of a story. I think sitting right here, goes back maybe about 15 years or so, when I was probably a little bit older than you, used to be a Musar Kolo. Rabbi Cohen led a Musar Kolo, which started after the Kol Seder was over at 6:30. So it interrupted for a few years in between. What was that? Baruch Hashem. At that point we were learning Chovas HaLevavos. And there's a guy who I knew from MTA, was a couple years younger than me. He didn't have so much shaykh with the base mind, but for some reason he used to come to the Musar Kol Seder. And we were learning Shara B'Tochen together in Chovas HaLevavos. And he asked me, how could it be? He said, you're going into Chinuch. You want to be in Rabbanus. So, you know, we're learning about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises that he's going to give every person exactly what they need. And the midah bitachon is to sense that whatever I'm given is precisely what I will require to subsist and to be successful in my own life. And to want what someone else has, that's beyond the bounds of appreciating that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has provided my tzrachim with precision. So how come? My Rebbe, first grade Rebbe, second grade Rebbe, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, every single one of them had a beat up station wagon, you know, and their house was falling apart and always needed a paint job. You know, cool, you can fill in the blanks. You know, and he's right. You know, the Rebbeim don't seem to be making the same six figures that the CEOs do, and I don't understand. So how do you go into a job with bitachon knowing that the pay scale just doesn't come anywhere near So that guy needs more than me, but I decide to be a Rebbe, so all of a sudden I need less? What's the pshat? So I think the pshat is that the midah bitachon of a machanach is different in terms of the bracha that Yaakov, you know, gave to Shimon Levi. That once he gave that direction for, as the Rambam says in a very different context, lo shevet Levi bilvad, but all those who take upon themselves the direction, the focus, the lifestyle of shevet Levi, so your lifestyle comforts are not going to match the way the rest of the world is functioning. Because after all, once you're buying into that inyan of Afitzim Yaakov, and you're taking your achrayas, the achrayas of Klal Yisrael, educating Klal Yisrael, and making sure that that's transmitted throughout the generations, so you're working in the Shimon Levi dispersion, lack of a firm residence and permanence and comfort, because again, that's what it means to have on your shoulders what Yaakov Avinu wanted to ensure would be maintained through Shevet Levi specifically, but also through others as well, and everyone else would take upon themselves that same focus of what they want to accomplish in their lives. And maybe that's a pshat. I don't know. But going through the generations, starting from Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the Rebbe, he was the one who took on that role par excellence more than anyone else. The message was that you're going to take one for the team. The way to indicate that you're the one to carry that mantle of leadership, of Torah leadership, is if you're able to take one for the team, that I'm not going to make the same amount of money. I'm not going to have the same comforts as everyone else, because that's not what my focus is. And that's why I want to suggest a pshat. Yeah, Rashi says in this week's parsha, the Mino Lekola Osa Acharon, the conversation between Moshe Rabbeinu and Kosh Baruch Hu, and gives them several signs. Hashem says, if they don't listen to the other signs, they'll listen to the final sign of the Tzaras. What does Rashi say? Rashi says, they'll listen to the final sign because just like you got punished for speaking badly about Klal Yisrael, so too, I'm going to punish Paro and anyone else who tries to hurt Klal Yisrael. That's, I hear, but like it's a little bit of a stretch, L'chor, on the Pashup Shalos. It could be. The Mino Lekola Osa Acharon means that if you were ready to take one for the team, for Klal Yisrael. If you're most of your nefesh, physically, for Klal Yisrael, so that indicates that you're the one who's ready to take on the achrayas of the leadership of Klal Yisrael with all of Shevet Levi behind you, with the mission that Yaakov assigned to them. There's an unbelievable letter that Rav Moshe Feinstein writes. It's in Chelek Gimel Yerodeas Min Ayin Aleph. The title of the tshuva is Hanhagas Mora B'Yeshiva Hineni Bazel Lavar Eze Ikarim Sh'al Mora Yalde Yisrael B'Yeshiva Leda. I'm going to lay out for you important principles that every Rebbe needs to know. Okay? And they're just, everyone has to read, whether they're going to be a Rebbe or not, you have to read this tshuva. And among the things he says is that a Rebbe cannot be mischashiv im koshi avoda kishetzrichim im atalmidim shein makshivim. The kids are going to be jumping all over the room, they're going to make a lot of noise, and cause trouble. You can't be bothered, and you can't take into cheshbon your responsibilities vis-a-vis what it is you need to go through to be successful. You have to know, leida shavodosim him lechza kodesh, ein ze kavodos chol, shavodi hirak l'maskiro. Normally, so you're doing a job for the person who hired you and for the person who's paying you. So then I have to understand, does the work, the difficulty and the effort that I need to expend in order to accomplish the task that I'm hired for, does it match up to my pay scale? No. Malacha zu hi l'shem yisbarach, sheyesh olavur be'munu l'fitzor chatamidim lo l'fiat tashlumen. Moshe Feinstein says, you're going to be a Rebbe, your job doesn't stop with whatever's commensurate to what you're being paid. It's just not true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is your boss. V'chazina me'akra, d'Hashem Yisbarach, rotz l'sheni ameilim b'tor b'mitzos, ve'in l'damas ki'im mitzos sheba b'kalas, k'mishin z'amin lo eser b'kano. And he goes on to explain that the way you perceive your responsibility as a malam is totally different. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was once asked about a yeshiva that wanted to install like a punch card system. You know, where you really don't see it like in the supermarket. That's the only place I see it anymore. You know, like the stock boy comes in, he swipes his card. They know he came in at 9:03, so he loses a few dollars from his minimum wage job that day. Right? So he wanted to install the same system in yeshiva so that the rebbein would get there on time. And Yaakov was furious. He said, hey, there is just no way to take that same type of mentality that the payment is for the precise number of minutes that you spend in the yeshiva building. That's not the way it works. A person who wants to... I always tell guys, you should never decide to go into chinuch by default. I had guys in college, same time as me, that, you know, they majored in sociology. No offense to sociology majors, but they majored in sociology. They got their C's, Baruch Hashem, they passed, they got their diploma. And when it was all finished, they weren't really sure what to do with themselves. So, I'm going to chinuch. Great, I'll start smicha. You should never apply for smicha like the last resort because I have nothing else you can do. You know why? Because I don't want you standing in front of the room when my third graders are there in class. You want to be a Rebbe, you have to have a passion. That's why Yaakov Kamenetsky explains in Sefer and Amos Yaakov that Levi and Shimon, the reason they got that task was because of the passion. They clearly had a lot of passion. When they put their mind to something together, especially, they could knock out the whole Shechem. But it had to be channeled for the right reason. Unfortunately, Shimon sort of went astray, and that's why at the end of the time in the Midbar, Pinchas is the one who's attacking Shimon, the Nasi of Shimon, because the passion went in the wrong direction, whereas the passion that was held by Levi was maintained in the appropriate focus. So all that came from the bracha to Levi, that to hold on to the achrayas of Klal Yisrael at maintaining the connection to Torah. And interestingly, ironically, Shevet Levi emerged in the Midbar, in Parsha Shmos, as the one who had the easiest lifestyle. Talking about how the Mesiris Nefesh that later in time became the mode of lifestyle for the Shevet Levi, whatever Shevet they came from. But in the Midbar itself, so Rashi tells us in Parakeh, Pasuk Dalet, that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron, they're just coming and going, they go in to talk to Paro, they leave Paro, right? What happened? So Paro says to them, L'chul v'sevasechem, go home and cook dinner, go take out the garbage, because they had no achrayas. He says, go deal with whatever you need to deal with at your home. But they weren't meshubar. So, in a sense, we turn back to Parshas Vayechi again, you find that the reason why they were not Meshubrish, Levi is the Rosh Yeshiva, that's how we started out. Levi and everyone, part of the Shevet, Moshe and Aaron, they were the Rosh Yeshiva. They were the ones who were learning in Kolo the whole time that Klal Yisrael was in Mitzrayim. They never worked. They had the freedom to come and go. So they sort of took on the role of Yisachar's blessing. Vayar Menucha Kitov, Vayit Shech Malizbo. Vayar Menucha Kitov. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the blessing of peace, Shalva, Menuchas HaNefesh to Yisachar. Yisachar later in history became the Rosh Sanhedrin. They were the biggest Talmidei Chacham. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them a plot of land in Eretz Yisrael that was uniquely and extraordinarily comfortable and pleasurable. Why? Because a person needs Menuchas HaNefesh to be able to accomplish and learn. If you have too many tirdos on your head the rest of the semester, so you don't have the Vayar Menucha Kitov. So Levi was able to develop that midah of being the Malamdim, the Machanchim, the Rosh Yeshiva, in Eretz Mitzrayim where they didn't have to work. That was their Vayar Menucha Kitov. Could be, though, it could be that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in mind. But what did Paro have in mind? Why didn't Paro enslave Shevet Levi? Right? What was he thinking? Doesn't make any sense. That 1/12 of his workforce, you know how many more pyramids he could have made? Well, how come Shevet Levi got knocked out? So, two pshatim, which I think are very insightful. Number one, this Rav Geli, the Rav of Broyers, said in the name of Rabbi Yonson Eibershitz, but I'm not sure it's exactly like this in the Sefer. I think I heard this from Rabbi Simon once. See, the astrologers, Paro's astrologers, knew that the Moshiach would come from Shevet Levi. They knew the Moshiach would come from Shevet Levi. So they figured, you know what, if we don't enslave Shevet Levi, if they're not engaged in the same type of effort and enslavement as everybody else, they'll never take the same initiative. If you're not suffering under the hands of the tyranny, so where are you going to get the impetus to react against it and start a revolution? Makes a lot of sense. So they say, you know, we'll leave them on the side, we'll let them take it easy, because how are they going to lead Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim if they're not able to muster the same, need to revolt, right? So where was their mistake? The mistake is what we said, because they didn't chap the fundamental midah of nosi ba'ol, of being moser nefesh for Klal Yisrael that was implanted in Shevet Levi, right? That's what we're saying, that they felt Moshe Rabbeinu, the leadership, I'm ready to take on a job which doesn't pay me what I really deserve for all the hours I'm putting into it. So who, if I'm able to feel the shiva of everyone else, I'm going to be able to react even if I'm not experiencing it myself. And Yehuda Willig said a great vort. The Pasuk says in this week's Parsha, Hinei Anar Bocheh. Basi Bas Paro is able to see that the baby is crying. So Pasha Pshat, this is Moshe Rabbeinu, right? So she sees the baby crying, she goes and she takes him out of the water. Baal Turim says that the gematria of Hinei Anar Bocheh is Aaron HaKohen. It was Aaron who was standing on the side with Miriam who was crying when he saw his brother like that. Beautiful pshat. So what's the verse? Yehuda Willig said, everyone wants to know, how did she know it was a Jewish baby, right? So some say he had a bris milah. No, the pshat is that it couldn't be anything else other than a Jewish baby whose brother was 3-year-old, was so margish, the tsar of his infant brother, that he was crying on the sidelines. That's how she knew, again, the midah of Shevet Levi. That's how she knew the mysterious nefesh, the to feeling the others' pain. That's how she knew it was a Jewish baby. The boss, I think that's the vort. That's the vort of Vayar Menucha Kitov, to know that it's comfortable to take it easy, but nevertheless, how does the pasuk end? Vayet Shechmo Lisbol, to be able to nevertheless put it on your shoulders to suffer for someone else, to know what it means to be able to take it easy and relax, and when it's vacation, just sort of like chill, go to Florida. Take it easy. As opposed to by Yitzchak Malachbol. One more connector, Rabbi Simon. This is awesome. Okay? Another pshat. Why was it that he didn't enslave Klal Yisrael? Now we won't go more than 5 minutes over. Okay? Why was it that he didn't enslave Shevet Levi? So I heard from Rabbi Cohen once. Bali Moser say as follows. Paro, he was a genius. He had very wise advisors. Okay? He had the best, right? He had Eov. He had Yisro. He had Bilam. These guys knew what they were talking about. Unbelievable strategy. He says, you know what? We can create... Again, he's trying to make sure that there's no chance of revolt later over the duration of the Shibud. The way to make sure that they never fight back against us is to incite a civil war. Create divisiveness amongst the people, and then they'll never be able to unite to fight back. So It's a great plan. 11/12 of the people are working day and night, Avodas Parach, and then you have one group of people that they're just sort of taking it easy. The guys in Kolel, the bench warmers, they're not doing anything. Everyone else resents the fact that they have to make a living, and they're getting our checks. Heard an unbelievable word from Rabbi Feiner, B'shem Rabbi David Feinstein, Yisachar and Zvulun, right? I'm making the most of this by Yechi Shmos, guys, okay? So, Yisachar and Zvulun, we understand the relationship, but why does Zvulun have to be the sailor? Why do they have to be these traveling merchants? Why can't you give them, you know, they're supporting the guys in the basement? Fine, give them some real estate. Give them some stock tips. You know, let them sit back in the office. You know, they'll have a lunch and learn, daf yomi. You know, give them a nice, comfortable parnasa, and they'll keep writing the checks to Yisachar. Well, makes a lot of sense. Why do you have to make them the seafarers? Was one of the most dangerous jobs you can have. Gemara says that the sailors came back once every 6 months. They didn't see their family, right? So he said the word is because if you did give them the cushy jobs, even if they had the money, you know, over time, you begin to say to yourself, you become resentful. I'm over here. He's just making the money. You know, I'm writing the checks, and he's enjoying all the fruits of my business acumen. And what did he do to deserve it? No, tell him to go out and get a job. Enough taking up space in the base manager. Go out and get a job. So instead of Kosh Baruch said, I'm going to send you out in the sea. So when the storm is raging and the waves are threatening to capsize the boat, so what is Shevet, what is Zvulun saying? They're crying, Kosh Baruch, please, Yisachar, learn another block of Mara, come on, please save us in the schus of the Lord. I mean, once they didn't have that Menuchas HaNefesh, once they were in that position of Sakana, so then they could be wholeheartedly behind Yisachar throughout. Otherwise, there's a danger. So that's what Paro wanted to incite within the Jewish people, that they should fight each other. See this Sheva Levi without any business. They're just, you know, taking it easy, and ultimately they'll never come to revolt because they have their own issues to resolve amongst them. So it was just the opposite. Just like according to the first pshat, Klal Yisrael was at peace with Sheva Levi because they had that midah of being sovel for others. Likewise, Klal Yisrael appreciated the need to always have a Shevet Levi. You need to have the guys who are learning, who are perpetuating the Mesorah, who are making sure that even when everyone else is having a good time or working hard, either way, we're here in the base management, we're keeping it strong. And that is for you guys, the Vayar Menucha Kitov, Vayetshech Mol Lisbol. That you had a chance to take it easy this week. You had the chance to go home. I see some of you guys are very far from home, but some guys are from a little bit closer. But the Menucha was there. But you appreciated that the true ultimate way to take advantage of the time off is through the learning. That to put yourself out there, not for just for yourself, but for Klal Yisrael, for the yeshiva. I don't think you appreciate how much chizk you give to the guys who are in the base medrash when it's not the fullest the entire year. That you guys come and give strength to the Kol Torah. It's very powerful. And more than anything, yeshiva has to have a banner. Whatever other mottos it has, yeshiva has to have a banner of Torah Lishma. That's what you guys are doing here. And that personal decision of Vayar Menucha Kitov, Vayet Shechmot Lizbol, reminds me, I think it was my last day of my first semester finals. First semester I was in YU. I stayed up the entire night studying for an economics exam. And I remember coming back to my room at like 9 a.m. I came back like 10:30 in the morning. I remember opening up my door, seeing my bed, and not remember anything that happened in the next 3 hours. I just woke up. And because Vayar Menucha Kitov, at some point, you know, you drop, you die. That's it. You have nothing left in you. But when you regain that strength and come back to the base medrash, so that is what separates the men from the boys. To close, actually, before I even do that, I would love to see us be able to do this for Simchas Torah also, by the way. You know, let's get everyone come back for Simchas Torah. I'm sure there'll be still plenty of people going on Torah tours, but we can bring the base medrash alive during that Menucha also. But if we stop there, I think we would miss out on the most important point, which is something, 2 minutes, that you guys are uniquely capable of appreciating. Rabbi Rucham has a totally different taish in this pasuk. Vayar Menucha Kitov. Up until now, we've been learning that there's Vayar Menucha Kitov, and then the contrast, that Afal Pichen, I'm going to stick my shoulder out and be makabel the old Shel Torah for myself and for all of Klal Yisrael when other people are enjoying the sun. There's another pshat. Vayar Menucha Kitov. Vayetshech Mosbol, it's not a contrast. It's one and the same. To appreciate that the true menucha is to be able to sit here and learn. That's a whole different darga. That's being able to say that I get so much geshmak, not despite what I could be doing, but this is what I want to be doing, and that I feel the most relaxation and the most rejuvenation and the most calm when I'm in the base medrash when I don't have all the other pressures. And there's so many other things I could be doing right now. And Afal Pichain, it's a Torah that carries me through that through this period of intercession, which ties into one final nekuda in Parsha Shmos that Mefarshim point out, unbelievable. In Pasuk Yutes, V'tarmanu mi'aldos el paro, lo'kanashim mitzios v'ivrios kichayos heina, they give their excuse, Shifrin Pul, why they can't kill the babies like Paro asks. V'yetav elokim li'aldos v'yir v'am v'yatzmu ma'od. Kadosh Baruch Hu does good for them, and the nation expands. V'yhi ki yoro mi'aldos ha'sohokim v'yaslam batim. The pasuk concludes by saying, when Hashem saw the Yerushalayim, so he gave them the batim kahuna, right? Batim leviyah. So what happened over here? There's an interruption of a narrative that has nothing to do with the rest of the flow of psukim. Vayetav elokim li me'aldos. What should have been immediately after that introduction of an Hashem who did good for them should have been vayaslam batim, right? It doesn't say it. It says vayetav elokim li me'aldos vayir va'am vayasmu mo'od, and then goes on to their reward. Well, what's the hefsek? So the Mefarshim say no. The greatest reward that Hashem could give to Yocheved and to Miriam, Vayitav Elokim Limados, was to see Vayirav Ha'amod, to see that part of Yishvitzu, that the fruits of their labor turned out successful. So Vayar Menucha Kitov, the greatest form of Menucha for you guys, is Vayitshech Malizbo. I give you a bracha that not only this week, but throughout your entire lives, Torah should provide that Menucha, and shouldn't be something which you need to escape from Menucha to get to, but it should be your menucha atzma whenever you're looking for that respite, whenever you're looking for that rejuvenation, and that the week shataka be exhilarating and get you back next week, Mitzvah Hashem, hitting the ground running and starting a new zman with a brand, with a fire that's infectious and contagious to all your friends.